Cómo Curar is your natural health show where we translate the science and turn it into useful, practical, and simple education to give you all the tools that you need to say no to any medical sentence. I am Coco March, your host.
Breast implants, are they good? Are they bad? Are there dangers? Each year, millions of women across the globe decide to have breast implants. But are these popular implants something that we can do without any dangers? Now, many women are having explantations, the removal of implants, because they don't feel good. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Dev. He is a Harvard double board certified cosmetic reconstructive surgeon that spends his time removing breast implants. Welcome to another episode of Cómo Curar. Each year, millions of women across the globe decide to undergo a popular procedure known as breast augmentation. The decision is to have larger breasts because sometimes we want to look more beautiful. However, just as breast implants are becoming popular, the removal is also becoming very well known. Many women, including some famous ones, are undergoing this procedure because of a new condition now known as breast implant illness. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Dev, a Harvard double certified cosmetic and reconstructive surgeon that will tell us everything that we should know before deciding to get bigger boobs. Dr. Dev, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited to share all the information I know and I've learned about this process. So appreciate you having me.
You know, most women, when they decide to have breast implants, I assume that they're very excited when they're going to have them. But are those breast implants safe, as we are told?
When it comes to safety, there's been a lot of discussion about breast implants. You know, when we talk about medical devices, we look to the FDA to deem whether a device is safe or not. And the FDA has deemed breast implants to be safe. However, we are seeing a lot of issues related to these implants, and we are now working on figuring out all those issues. I'm sure we'll go through many of those as we move forward that are related to the implants. So are they safe? I personally don't think they are safe. Do they cause problems? Yes, they cause many problems. And I think it's important to understand the safety and issues they are causing.
How long after implants have been implanted does it take for a woman to start experiencing illnesses? Is it immediate right after, or sometimes it takes some time?
Yeah, that's a tough one to gauge because, you know, since it's a relatively new diagnosis or conditions that it has emerged, we are seeing patients that have started experiencing symptoms as soon as 6 weeks after the surgery. We're also seeing patients who have had implants for 30, 40 years and have reported onset of symptoms 10 to 15 years ago. Some patients say they've been feeling like this since they ever got the implants 10 or 15 years ago, but they just didn't realize it was an issue related to the implants. So the variability is from almost immediate to 10, 15, 20 years after the surgery.
And why does that happen?
Yeah, the thought process between why patients could be suffering from what's called breast implant illness is it's either a reaction to a foreign body that's inside of us. So the autoimmune system can recognize it as foreign, or it's a reaction or an inflammatory response to something that's going on inside. So that's the working theory, that we have a foreign body, the body doesn't like it, and it's fighting against it.
But usually we're told that those implants, they just encapsulate and the body does not even notice. Is that true? Or for what you're saying, it doesn't seem to be very accurate.
Right. So everyone that gets the implant forms a capsule around it. And that's the body's defense mechanism that's working. So whenever you put the foreign body in, the body says, hey, we have something foreign in here. Let's form a shell around it. And whenever you send that shell for testing, the pathology results always come back as chronic inflammation, inflammatory tissue. So it's your body's way of defending itself and forming a capsule around it.
So when women come to see you or talk to you in consultation, What are the most common complaints? What makes them think that perhaps their implants are the cause of their conditions?
Yeah, you know, the patients come in different subsets for explantation. When we're talking specifically about breast implant illness as being one of the subsets of patients that want to remove them, the things they're talking about are, wow, you know, we've had brain fog. We feel like we're in a constant state of cloudiness around our head. They call it almost feeling hungover all the time. Joint pain, fatigue, taking frequent naps, headaches, muscle weakness, rashes, just profound hair loss, clumps of hair in the sink and the shower. So these are kind of some of the most common symptoms that they're describing. And they've seen 5-10 different types of doctors to do workup for all these issues that they're having, panic attacks, anxieties, and they're the healthiest people on paper. Most of their labs look okay. Their imaging looks good. The specialists end up referring to another specialist. And so they kind of go in this big circle and nobody can tell them what's going on. And they end up doing some research or learning about it or hearing it from a friend or a colleague that, hey, you know, maybe your implants are causing your issues. And they do the research and they end up coming to us to talk about breast implant removal.
Do you think that there is one common denominator with these women? Because I see a lot of different symptoms, but there is one that kind of like lingers with all of them that you would say, if you're experiencing that and you have implants, maybe the implants are causing you the problem.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to the autoimmune issues or the reaction from the implant, I think the top three that we see are fatigue, joint pain, and anxiety or panic attacks. You know, when you have these, unfortunately, it's tough to pinpoint and a patient comes and say, hey, I'm tired and I have headaches and I have these issues. It's tough to immediately say, okay, your implants are causing the issue. So it's important to do the whole workup saying, okay, you know, are you having headaches because of some true medical issue as something going on in your head with your blood pressure? Are you having joint pain related to some sort of autoimmune rheumatoid? So we try to rule out different things, and it almost comes down to it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So you make sure certain things aren't going on, and then you diagnose it based off of the negative results of that investigation.
Do one type of implant cause more problems than a different one? There is silicone implants, there is saline implants. Is there a bigger culprit, or all of them are equally harmful?
Yeah, it's in our patient population, 50% have silicone, 50% have saline. So they're both equally responsible. You know, it comes down to the implant shell and its reaction to the shell. The one real bad player, in my opinion, are the textured implants. So that particular implant has a shell that's almost like sandpaper. And so those cause a lot of inflammatory reaction. There's been a rare form of lymphoma that's been affiliated most commonly with the textured implants. So in my opinion, those are probably the worst players. But when you talk about symptoms and issues, all implants cause those problems.
But lymphoma, that's a serious disease. I mean, it's very serious when we think that you go to visit a plastic surgeon and all he or she will talk about is about your new beautiful breasts and if you want tear shape or gummy bear or whatever different textures there are. But you say that the texturized ones are more dangerous. What makes them to be more dangerous? You talked about some sandpaper texture, but why is that more of a problem?
Yeah, if you can imagine, you know, you have this sandpaper texture, and if that is constantly rubbing, friction, you're going to get a chronic inflammatory reaction, and that leads to this lymphoma, which is a cancer of the autoimmune system. It's not a breast cancer, very different from breast cancer, and it forms just around the shell. And so, you know, they started recognizing this, you know, a decade ago or so, and the numbers have just significantly risen over the course of the past 10 years because they're recognizing, one, there's this rare form of lymphoma out there, and then two, testing has become more prevalent, and then identifying, and more patients were getting textured implants. So I think the peak of that lymphoma, we're going to see it maybe in 2026, 2027 because of the timeline of the textured implants that have been placed.
One, those implants. I don't have implants, so I really know very little about them. So you said, but the texture is like sandpaper. So is that because it causes some why? I'm very curious.
No, it's a good question. And the reason why textured was popularized was because, one, it sits in the pocket because it's got a shell that's almost sticks in an area, so the implant doesn't flip around or move to the side or fall down. And they were reporting the rates of capsular contracture, meaning a thick, hard shell capsule forming on it, to be lower for the textured implants. And so for those, and then the shape is a little bit more solid. So from a shape standpoint, from lack of mobility and the capsular contracture, people were putting in these textured implants. And it was actually really a lot of textured implants were used for breast cancer reconstruction. So, you know, that's the really sad point is, you know, these patients are suffering from breast cancer. They undergo all this treatment to put in textured implants, and 10 years later, they find out they have a lymphoma from these textured implants. It's heartbreaking.
Yes. You touched on a point that I really think we need to cover. Women that have cancer and they need to have mastectomy where the breasts are removed, what can they do if implants are not the best option? What do you offer an option for these women?
Yeah, there's actually an excellent option. It's to use your own tissue to reconstruct your breasts. So my training was very heavily focused in breast cancer reconstruction. And we used to do reconstruction where we would take tissue from the abdomen, the legs, the bottom portion of the buttocks, and transplant them to the chest area after the mastectomy, connect the blood vessels, and you have your own healthy tissue to reconstruct the breasts without putting an implant in. So that is an option. It's definitely a more involved procedure, but, you know, it's being done frequently. And the reason implants are another option is it's a quicker, easier procedure. The recovery is quicker and easier. But again, you know, then you have to deal with any complications related to the implant. So using your own tissue is a great option to reconstruct your breasts after a mastectomy. And then the last option is some patients just don't want anything done. They want the cancer out. They want to be done with it. And so they opt to have what's called a flat surgery. So remove the breasts, close the skin, and then they live with what's called an external prosthesis for a breast mount. So that's also an option.
What's the difference between tissue transfer and fat transfer for the breast?
So fat transfer is when we do liposuction to different areas of the body, like the abdomen, the flanks, and the thighs, and we collect that fat and we inject it into the breasts. A tissue transfer is when you actually take a bulk of tissue. So when you do a tissue transfer from the abdomen to the breast, you actually take the skin, you take the fat, and sometimes a little portion of the muscle, and you transfer a bulk of it to the breasts with the blood vessels and sometimes even the nerves and reconnect everything. So that tissue, basically, it's almost like doing an organ transplant. It forms the blood supply, or you connect the blood supply, and it's a healthy living tissue. Fat transfer, on the other hand, you're injecting it in, and it relies on blood vessels, tiny blood vessels, to form over the course of 3 to 6 weeks for it to survive.
I see. But would that tissue transfer involve having scars, perhaps, on the areas of the body where the tissue is transferred? How is it aesthetically, you know, the result?
Yeah, they're actually great. You know, that's the advantage of training and being a plastic surgeon, is you want to functionally restore things, but you also want to have a cosmetically acceptable result. So the tissue transfer from the abdomen is almost like doing a tummy tuck for the patient. So, you know, you're removing excess skin, you're tightening the abdomen, so they get the benefit of almost a tummy tuck like effect, and then you're transferring the tissue to the breast. Even for the buttocks, you're creating a scar that's hidden in the buttock crease, so you really can't see that if it's well placed. So these are some of the nuances as plastic surgeons that we're mindful of, is creating a aesthetically pleasing result from the donor site.
Because I don't want to be judgmental here. There are women that have very little breast, and they don't feel comfortable. They don't feel feminine. So I do understand the desire to feel more feminine. Do some women undergo this type of procedure where you do a tissue transfer with or without fat transfer to help them have larger breasts?
Yeah, I mean, you could. Again, it's a pretty involved procedure to do. You're putting yourself at a little bit of kind of, you have to weigh the risk and benefit of doing a tissue transfer for a cosmetic reason. I don't think too many physicians would advocate doing that as a primary way to enhance the breasts. And plus, when you do that, say, God forbid, down the road, you do have some deformity, breast cancer, or something that needs a tissue transfer, you're kind of eliminating that source that you had before. But for augmentation, you know, other than tissue transfer, I've done plenty of fat transfers to the breast to enlarge and augment the breast as a natural form of enhancement without even having to put implants in. Patients love that. I think it's a great option for patients.
Going back to the breast implants, you mentioned that fatigue, mental fog are very common symptoms, complaints that women have. But additionally to that, do you know of diseases that they have developed that they, separate from an autoimmune disorder, other diseases that have been developed that later were linked to breast augmentation?
Yeah, you know, the other things that we're seeing related to them could be, say, a thyroid disorder called Hashimoto's, where you have a thyroid imbalance related to. And again, that falls under autoimmune, but it's still nonetheless an endocrine or a thyroid organ. We're seeing things such as rheumatoid arthritis, patients diagnosed with Sjögren syndrome. Again, all fall within the autoimmune category, but nonetheless, different type of disease processes that happen as a result of a foreign body reaction.
Another concern that it's more popular, more than breast implant illness, is leakage. What health issues are developed because the silicone leaks? And people, do they know, or you just don't know that your silicone is leaking?
Yeah, no, that's a real challenging issue, especially when you have silicone implants. You know, when you talk about implant rupture, there's saline rupture and silicone rupture. Silicone rupture, if it happens and it happens contained within the shell, it's called intracapsular, meaning within the capsule. And then if it ruptures outside the cell, that's called extracapsular rupture. And so when it ruptures and leaks out, it can leak into the lymph nodes, it can leak into the breast tissue. And we see what's called gel bleed or gel migration, where the silicone can migrate to different parts of the body. Those are devastating. I've done a lot of those cases. I mean, that silicone, it sticks to the tissue. It's hard. It's thick. It forms red areas. You know, people suffer pretty badly. And, you know, sometimes you just don't know when they're ruptured. They're called silent ruptures. That's why the FDA recommends screening for silicone implants. So the guideline is, anyone who gets a silicone implant, they need to get MRIs starting 5 to 6 years after the implant was placed, and then 2 to 3 years after that, every 2 to 3 years. And I don't think people know about that. I mean, people who have explanted with me, 90% had no idea that they needed to do a screening or an imaging. But then, yeah, silent rupture is a real thing. And as the implants age, the rupture rate goes up because you have shell degradation. And so, if you're feeling pain, if your implants get hard, you have any changes in your implant or your breast consistency, it's important to seek consultation and get imaging just to make sure there's not a rupture, because the consequences are pretty bad.
Dr. Depp, when there is an imaging, is it 100% accurate? Because I've heard that sometimes it appears that there is no rupture, the implant is removed, and then surprise, surprise, it was ruptured.
Yeah, I hear that every day. They're like, oh my God, we thought these were going to stay in forever, and we didn't realize, nobody told us that, you know, we had to exchange them. So the guidelines or the recommendations are that implants should be exchanged or removed every 10 to 12 years. That's the shelf life of the implant. We've seen ruptures as early as 7 years, but, you know, usually the ruptures are centered around either mechanical forces on the breast, but there's chronic degradation going on. So every 10 to 12 years, either exchange or remove. And then the surveillance we talked about starts at 5 to 6 years after placement, where you get an MRI, make sure nothing bad's going on. And then you wait 2 to 3 years and keep on doing that imaging. And by the way, that MRI usually is not covered under insurance. So you're shelling out another $2,000 to $3,000 just to get that imaging for surveillance.
That's really good to know, because many times women, and especially there is now a wave of people that are going to other countries like Colombia, the Dominican Republic, to have breast augmentation because it's a little more economical. But then when you think that the cost on your health plus the cost to do imaging in a few years to guarantee that they are not broken, it's rather demanding. Do you have a lot of women that have done their surgery elsewhere, and then when they come to the U.S., they have issues or they have to explant?
A lot, yeah. You know, I would say 30% of my practice is with patients from Mexico, Central America, and South America. And we're also now seeing patients from Europe and Africa and the Middle East. But yeah, you know, they go there. They're either from, you know, South America or one of the countries, and or they have family there, and economically it makes more sense to go there and do it. And they come back, and oftentimes they can have issues related to infections, chronic pain from the implants, the weight of the implants, capsular contracture, hardening of the implants, and then they're kind of fall into this whole, you know, domino effect of reconstruction and revisions. And alluding to your point about cost, if you think about it, like if someone is 21 or 22 and gets implants, if they have to exchange or replace them every 10 to 12 years over a lifetime, I mean, you're talking about 8 or 9 surgeries plus any issues with complications, anesthesia fees, recovery, time lost from work, imaging. I mean, that adds up, and that kind of economical consequence is never understood or even looked at early on.
Mammograms. Can mammograms rupture implants?
It can, yeah. You know, the compression of the mammogram device on the implants can cause ruptures. I've seen it. I've actually explanted 4 to 5 mammogram techs who have done mammograms and said, oh my God, after the mammogram, the patient reported severe pain and the pain did not go away. They got ultrasounds and MRIs that showed a rupture. So it definitely can happen.
What can a woman expect from an explantation? Because I'm afraid that the biggest fear for a woman would be my skin on the breast has expanded. Now I have, you know, more skin. Now I'm going to have no skin, no breasts. What can a woman expect? And how can we help them not be afraid? Because if a woman is having an autoimmune condition, that condition, I suppose, if it's caused by breast implants, it's not going to go away unless you remove them, right?
Right. So if the internal switch is the implants causing the issue, unless that switch is turned off, which is removal, it's not going to change. I'm just going to answer one thing about that. So when we talk about the autoimmune issues, breast implant illness, in my opinion, falls under a umbrella of chronic illnesses. And there's things like mold toxicity, heavy metal toxicity, environmental things that can stimulate your immune system to be chronically active. So, but if your internal switch is always on, nothing's going to change. And in my opinion, until you get that out, you know, things aren't going to change. So that's one way to look at it. But yeah, you know, when a patient comes in and they're talking about the expectations for an explant surgery, so there's two things to look at. One is the health consequences of removing it, and then there's the cosmetic consequences of removing it. And most people who are sick or really sick, they're like, we don't care what you do, just get these out. But you want to feel good, but you want to look good too. So, you know, my goal is to, one, do an excellent job removing the implant and the capsule and cleaning everything nicely, and then doing a amazing job trying to reconstruct the breast to create a natural breast. And so, you know, when you try to guide the patient through it, they're so used to having these big implants and clothing, the way they kind of appearances. So you have to walk him through what a natural breast is supposed to look like and how it's going to feel. So we talk about whether they need a lift or not to tighten up the loose skin after the implants are out. And then if they, I think the biggest kicker in the explant surgical world is the amount of breast tissue a patients have. So if somebody has a good amount of breast tissue, it works in their advantage because you use that to reconstruct the breasts and fill in the space where the implant used to live. But the tough cases are patients who are, you know, there's a lot of extra skin, implants, and not much breast tissue. So those patients need a lot of counseling. They like to see pictures to see what they expect, and then just kind of understanding what the expectations are afterwards.
So if there is a lot of extra skin, what happens? I mean, how is that reconstructed? Because I think that it's fair that we want to give women a broad view of what can happen before even they go to a consultation.
So if there's a lot of extra skin, so we have to do skin tightening, and the skin tightening is designed to try and create a natural shape. So not to remove too much skin, so you alter the shape of the breast, but then to remove enough so you create a natural breast mound. And so that's the first step, is remove the implants and then create a natural breast mound. And then some patients will say, okay, everything is healed up. I feel great. My symptoms are better. You know, I feel like myself again. And then they'll kind of venture into things like fat transfer to try and volumize the breasts a little bit, just to give them a little bit more volume and confidence on their chest area.
Scars. Where are the scars usually after this type of removal? Where is it removed from? Is it removed from the side, from the bottom?
Yeah, so if we're doing just explant only, so the scars are hidden underneath the breast fold, and sometimes you can just use a pre-existing scar from its placement to help get it out. But if a patient needs a lift, there are a few types of lifts that I like to do. That involves making an incision around the areola, one going up and down, so we call it a lollipop lift because it looks like a lollipop, and then the other type is to do an anchor style lift. So that involves an incision on the bottom. So with the lift, it's a little bit more extensive scarring, but the advantage of the lift is to tighten up the loose skin and reconstruct the breast. So everything's kind of brought up to a happier spot.
After a woman has had an explantation because of health issues, how long in your experience does it take them to say, wow, I do feel better?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen patients feel better a week after surgery, and it's phenomenal. I've seen patients take a year and a half to 2 years to feel better. I think lumping that time range of the average time that patients really start to feel better, I think is between 6 months and 1 year.
Does it vary depending on how long those implants have been in?
No, that's the curious part about this whole thing is, you know, we just never know. Patients have had implants for 30 years, and a week after the surgery, they're like, wow, I just feel like a different person. And patients who have had implants in for maybe even 6 months, and you take them out, it takes them 6 months to a year. So I think everyone has a different reset button and how their autoimmune system responds to the removal. But that's definitely the most curious part. But we always hope that when we take them out, you know, a week, 2 weeks later, they're reporting improvements, but that's just not the reality of it.
In comparison with an implant, what can be the expectations for women? I mean, there are implants that are 250 cc's, 300 cc's. I really don't know how big those are, but it just sounds like a lot of volume. If we think, you know, of a quarter liter concentrated into your breast, what is a realistic expectation for a woman? Let's say as a woman that, because she had perhaps breast cancer, needs to have a reconstruction with tissue and then a fat transfer. Is she going to obtain a sizable breast, or will she have to live with a smaller breast?
Yeah, that depends on a couple of factors, you know, the size or the height and the weight of the patient and just the tissue availability that they have. So if you have someone who's, say, 5'7 and weighs 130 pounds, you can use that number to gauge how much actual healthy fat or tissue they'll have to reconstruct the breast. And then that's kind of the important part of the in-person consultation, is to assess the quality of the tissue and then how much is actually being able to be used. And then you can gauge sizes based off of that. So, you know, when you do that examination, you can say, okay, realistically, you're going to be a happy A cup or a small B cup based on that examination. Patients do come in and say, I want to be a C cup. And, you know, you try your best to give them a realistic expectation on how far you can get them to that point. A lot of it's just based on how much availability they have of tissue.
Why do you think that big breasts are such an important part of women feeling feminine? And that has exploded on so many women wanting this surgery.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, social media, the media, you know, movies have kind of created a social stigma of what can be considered aesthetically pleasing or even feminine or sexual to some degree. And so I think that's a great question you ask, and I don't have breasts, so, you know, but I asked my patients about why they got their implants and what motivated them to get them. Most of the time they talk about, oh, it was in style, everyone was doing it, my friends were doing it, and some of them do it just because they feel more feminine. Those are some of the reasons I think patients do it, but as they age or they get older or they have the implants in, then they realize the health consequences can be, you know, affecting them. And so now they're not feeling good and they just don't like the appearance that they're having. And so then they start thinking about the explant process. We're coming to a time where accepting your natural body and your natural form is feminine, and the way you look in clothing and you don't attract attention from certain areas is a nice way to go, and you're setting examples for future generations. So I think that mindset has definitely been has been kind of brought to light, and I think it's a great thing for young females to have.
I think that's such a beautiful way how you've put it, because I don't have daughters. I have all boys, so I'm never going to have to face a daughter saying, I would like to have breast implants. But for moms, sometimes, you know, it's a little bit difficult to tell your daughter, hey, I heard that it's dangerous. Don't do it. If we've have had breast implants or we have them, it's more challenging. What would you tell, you know, to the young woman that is listening to us right now and is considering breast implants? What message from a medical standpoint and from a male standpoint as well? Because sometimes I think that the perception is that if I don't have big breasts, men are not going to find me attractive. What would you tell all these young women, first medically and secondarily, as far as being attractive and big breasts?
Yeah, you know, from a medical standpoint, do your research and understand what breast implants are, the risks and benefits of doing it. You know, the complications associated with the implants, ask the right questions and understand what it does to your body and the effects it has on that. You want to make sure that you don't just put them in without understanding those risks. And I think that's really underscored with amongst plastic surgeons and the health community in general. It's just from talking to patients, they don't know it's not a lifelong device. They don't know about the autoimmune issues related to it, the rare form of cancers that are linked with it, the imaging needed, the cost. So learning about all those things and saying, hey, is it worth going through all that? And then you make a decision based on your own personal opinion and choices. From a male perspective, you know, if, in my opinion, accepting your natural body, I think, is the best way to go. And if you're thinking about implants and trying to attract attention from the implants, it's probably the wrong reason to put them in, because you're the best version of yourself as you are. And you don't need implants to represent that version of yourself. So that's how I kind of look at it. But yeah, you know, I think medically, just educate yourself, talk to people. I actually enjoy doing consults with people who come in to talk about implants when they don't even have implants, because they want to learn the other side of the story. And so talking about why not to put implants and other options to do it. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they want to book surgery or not. That's not the point of it. The point is to inform and educate. So
do you do many explanting on young women in their 20s?
Yeah, we do. You know, and in the U.S., you're not allowed to have implants in until a certain age, 22. But we see a lot of patients from South America who have had implants placed at 17, 18. And so I've explanted a lot of patients in their 20s. Those are the challenging cases, too, because they're not feeling good. They could be pain, autoimmune issues, and then you have to kind of counsel them through the emotional aspect of it, because they've gotten the implants for certain reasons and now they don't have them. So we always push towards, hey, you're feeling good, your health is wealth, and you're doing better, and the rest will kind of fall into place.
Dr. Dev, thank you so much for helping us to learn about explanting, to learn about the dangers of implants. And you're located in Miami. Where can we learn more about you? Where can we go if we have implants and we would like to get explanted?
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I know it's a lot to discuss and there's so much more, but you can follow me on Instagram on my professional page at Dr. Dev Du. So that's DrDevVdo. You can also follow my office manager and patient coordinator, Beatrice Zuluaga, who is very actively involved in the explant community. She's an explant patient herself, and she is at Peace, Love, and Plastic Surgery. We also have a Facebook support group called Dr. Dev's Divas, coined by one of my patients. And so we have about approximately 5,000 members on there. A lot of my explant patients who are happy to share their story. And yeah, we're located in Brickell, Miami. So if you Google my name, Dr. Dev, you'll be able to find us, and we're happy to help you out.
Dr. Dev, thank you so much for being in the show. And hopefully many women that are wondering if there is hope for their conditions, they know that there is. And those that are wondering if they should have implants, now they see the other side before making that decision. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.